Well, winter officially started last week, as a matter of fact. And the days are actually already getting longer, although you wouldn't know it.
Just barely, yeah.
Yeah, just barely getting a little bit longer. We're going to take a look at what's going on. What's happened with our winter? What kind of a, boy, what a winter we've had here in Wisconsin. It's a pretty mild one. And we'll take a look ahead. We'll answer your questions about weather and climate. Our weather guys, John Martin, Professor of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison, with me in the studio. Hey, John.
How you doing, Larry?
Great. Great to have you with us. Steve Ackerman with us by phone today. He directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW and also a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Steve, always a pleasure. And you're in New Mexico?
I am in New Mexico. We were supposed to leave this afternoon at like 4 o'clock, but for a two-day vacation in New Mexico. But given the weather conditions, we decided we should try and leave Sunday night, and the airlines collaborated with us. So,
yeah,
which is good because there are a bunch of delays already in Madison Airport, both arrivals and departures. So.
Yeah,
yeah. The weather has really changed, and I think we're looking what five to 11 inches of snow. In
yeah,
Madison.
The 11's kind of high in Madison. I'd say it's closer to probably 5, but not far north of us. It could be between 8 and 12. By the time it's all over with.
Okay,
yeah.
So...
And any freezing rain still, or...
Well, that's a threat. It's right now, the freezing rain's confined to northern Illinois, and it has been stubborn to move northward. So that's very good news. I mean, the longer we can forestall the coating of freezing rain, and we may forestall it entirely, but if we can do that, then this is just a normal sort of snowstorm event, which will quickly be recovered. But if it's ice, it gets worse.
Yeah, that's for sure. And let me give the number again. If you'd like to join in, have a weather question or a comment or maybe a weather experience to share, join in at 1-800-642-1234. Got a weather photo. You can also post that up on our... I love weather the weather photos that we get. Go to our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. You can post your weather photos and questions there as well. Or you can also email us at talk@wpr.org. We certainly love to hear from you. And, you know, it's been a really mild December.
Unbelievably mild December. We're running something like 13 degrees above normal for the month. And we may, even with this snow and with a day or two where it might be a little bit closer to normal, we're going to probably end up around 13 degrees above normal for the month, which is just a staggeringly high temperature.
13 degrees. Yeah, you know, sometimes you... Like 1 degree,
right?
Is, you know, oh, that's quite a bit.
And the thing about it is it's not isolated. Albany, New York had its highest temperature ever on Christmas Day the other day, and they had a dew point temperature that exceeded their all-time high for the date, which is just exceptional. I mean, it's a little bit of geek speak there, but remarkable weather going on in the entire eastern two-thirds of the United States. The Rocky Mountains is the boundary between what's way out of line and what's cooler than normal in the west.
Boy. A Facebook question from Ryder who wonders, why has it been so windy this fall and winter? Has it been windier than normal?
That's always a question. Steve, don't we always get that question?
Yeah, we do. And
and I never know the answer.
Windier, right? Yeah. Well, I looked into it once and talked to Ed Hopkins, one of the state climatologists. And I think what happened is they moved the wind observations around, so you see a really big discontinuity, and it's not necessarily real.
Yeah,
you know, so it's one of those things that somebody would really have to go in and look at the data very carefully.
Yeah, my day-to-day experience, largely Monday through Friday and inside from, 7 to 5 p.m., hasn't made me feel like it's been a windier than normal, autumn and early winter, but maybe the data suggests otherwise. I really don't know. I couldn't make a comment on that.
No.
I would agree totally. And we moved to the north side of the lake about 10 years ago, and then it seemed like it got really windy, but that's because the wind would blow over the lake. There'd be less friction.
Yeah,
so
no trees.
It was windier.
It really was windier. Well, in going forward, is it going to be warm for the rest of the winter?
Well, there's no particularly obvious reason to expect that what's been established for much of the fall and early part of the winter is going to be suddenly broken down. So that's, given the fact that the the hemispheric flow has kind of set itself up in an unusual way, but been persistent since October 1st or so, and the fact that we have an El Nino, which almost always makes us warmer than normal in Wisconsin, not to the tune of 13 degrees but for a month, but something like 2 or 3 or 4 degrees. I don't expect that people are going to remember this winter as a cold, kind of brutal winter. I think it'll be just the opposite.
Yeah, and just
yeah, NOAA's seasonal outlook for the next 3 months is good chance of above precipitation, climate-wise, for our area.
Well, it's kind of nice in a way. A lot of people have said to me, oh, it's nice not to have to shovel snow and all the rest of it, although I kind of miss it a little bit.
I'd miss it a lot. I mean, I'm in an unusual position today of rooting against a snowstorm. My son's trying to fly to Connecticut tonight, and there's some risk that it might not work out, and I don't feel good about that for him. But on the other hand, open fields with bare soil without snow on them at this time of year is very bad for the water table, and if it lasts all winter long, it's particularly bad. So there's a lot of ecological and agricultural business reasons why it's good to have a snow cover, and we haven't had even the slightest bit of it until today. And this, frankly, I don't think this is going to be the kind of snow cover that in Dane County anyway, southern Dane County, that's going to last that long, because it threatens to warm up again. So,
it does.
Yeah, I mean, not to 50 and 60 degrees, but warm enough with sunshine that you can erode a snowpack fairly quickly.
So temperatures hit 58 degrees this past Wednesday in Racine.
Mm.
And I think it hit 58 in Milwaukee on December 23rd.
So. Yeah, and we had 56 that day, I think, officially in Madison. And, right around a day or two before Christmas, maybe a lot of people had the same experience I did, walking in and out of a bunch of different places all day long, and I couldn't help but comment on it every time I walked back outside. It wasn't only warm, but it was moist. It felt like middle or late part of March. It was a remarkable day.
We had a Facebook comment from Patty. The ice has not been limited to northern Illinois. We live in southern Dousman and had about a half inch of icy precipitation and very slippery roads. Mm. It's snowing steadily now, but my daughter drove to La Crosse about 8 this morning, and the roads to Madison were slick and icy in spots.
Yeah.
So the advice there is take it easy.
Yeah, I think the further south you go from Madison today toward Chicago, at least until later this afternoon, where it should change all terrain in the Chicago metro area by 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and then it'll kind of wash away the ice because it won't be that much accumulated. But until then, it's slippery to the south and southeast of us. And, the longer it stays all snow here in Madison, the better for commuting. It's just that's easier for us to deal with than ice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Simple as that.
For sure. Now,
John, how long do you think it's going to last, the precip?
I think it'll snow through the early part of the evening at a minimum. I wouldn't be surprised if it's still flurrying by 8 o'clock in the evening. I think the heaviest part of the snow will be much of this afternoon. Let's say from 10 o'clock it started heavily again, and I think it'll probably be moderate to light all the way through probably 5 p.m. 6 p.m.
I'm glad I left.
Yeah, you made the right decision.
What's the temperature?
When we got down here, we checked all the airports, the connecting airports, Detroit and Minneapolis and everything, and everything looked fine. And then after we made our changes, and the airlines was very cooperative with doing that, we realized that I-40 that goes through Albuquerque, between Albuquerque and Texas, was all closed down.
Oh, boy.
Because of snowfall and drifting snow. Mm. And it still may be closed, actually, I think. But in Albuquerque, where we currently are, it's pretty nice.
Yeah, that's good.
What's the temperature?
It is like in the upper 20s.
Yeah, you're at elevation, right? You're at 5,000 feet or 6,000 feet in Albuquerque?
Yeah. Yeah, and right between some mountain ranges, too, so a little bit protected if the wind's coming the right way.
Yeah.
I'm wondering about here we had these terrible tornadoes in Texas. Was it Texas, Oklahoma?
Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, yeah.
I mean, and these are states where, you expect at certain times of the year to be seeing tornadoes and reading about tornadoes, but is it at this time of the year?
This is slightly early. For the southeast states do have a tornado frequency maximum around early February through the end of March, maybe the first week of April, before it starts to shift northward into Oklahoma and the plain states. So this is a little bit unusual, but honestly not way out of line. It's just... You know, it may be one of these features that if we really looked at it carefully, we might find a little bit more of a spike in December and January tornadoes in El Nino years down in the southeast U.S. and south central plains than we do, you know, in non-El Nino years. There's some possibility that connection exists. I don't know if anybody's done any particular work on that. So it's a little bit out of line, but not really otherworldly, I'd say that.
And I was wondering, with regard to the intensities, right? These are EF4s and EF5s.
Yeah, these are strong tornadoes.
Strong, which may not be as common.
That's right, really strong tornadoes. And, you know, one of the things that we've been thinking about a lot with respect to jet streams, there's two jet stream species, the subtropical and the polar jet, and when they get themselves vertically aligned, that actually increases the depth of the atmosphere through which these convective storms can actually penetrate with ease. And this may be a case in which there was a lot more of the so-called convective available potential energy at the top part of the atmosphere because the tropopause was at tropical levels as opposed to mid-latitude levels, resulted from the juxtaposition of these jets. So it's a really interesting, not particularly complicated, the words sound complicated, but the basic concept is simple. And I think that this was a case where we may have seen, because of this vertical superposition of jets, an unusually deep layer of unstably stratified air that leads to intense thunderstorms, which spawn the tornadoes.
And so when at what temperature do we say, okay, we're not going to get a tornado? It's X temperature outside.
Oh, I see what you mean. I'd guess that you need to have a high dew point temperature, so there's probably a cap there. You need to have really moist air at the ground, and that translates to another variable that has to be quite high, equivalent potential temperature. So I'd say if your temperature is below about 50 Fahrenheit, your risk has gone way down for tornadic activity. But it depends on where you are, too. It's not a simple one-to-one correspondence with the temperature, but I would guess that. That would be my first guess. What do you think, Steve?
I think that's a great answer, John, and I think it would make a great qualifying question.
Actually, you're right about that, yeah.
Yeah, because you really got to talk about the other things in the atmosphere that generate it and then how with the temperature at the surface kind of ameliorate that. So
yeah, right.
I think
right.
Your analysis with you need the high dew points in order to get it, so having a temperature below those high dew points would probably be the best answer to converge on.
Yeah, maybe that's right. You got to have it right.
Let's remember
that
for next year.
That's a good idea. And in fact, I'll let you author the question so that my responsibility is now zero.
Well, I tell you, but if it's 32 degrees or less, you're not going to get.
No, you just can't. You know what it is, Steve? As we're talking about it, you can't get the boundary layer involved. You might have some really wild things going on in the middle troposphere, but if you can't get it all the way down to the ground, if you take that out of play by making the air too cold and the stratification too high, forget it.
No chance. Well, we got to forget about it for just a couple of minutes. You stay with us. We'll take a look at the news, and then we'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at climate and weather with our weather guide, Steve Ackerman. With us by phone from New Mexico, he directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, a professor at UW-Madison, and John Martin, also a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. So they come by once a month, last Monday of the month, every month, to talk with you and with me. And if you have a question or maybe an experience to share, maybe a photo, if you got a photo and a question, go to our Facebook page. The title of the Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show, but phone in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or again, phone us at 1-800-642-1234. And we had an email from Bob in Minocqua. I live on Johnson Lake in the Minocqua Woodruff area, and the lake just froze over today, December 28th, compared to 2014 when it froze on November 15th.
Mm.
Quite a difference, Steve.
Yeah. I mean, last year in November in particular, and the year before that, 2013, it was pretty cold Novembers.
Yeah.
But I don't think our lakes are going to freeze for another week at least, right?
Yeah, I would guess it's going to be longer than that. In fact, I'd like to know what the average is for Johnson Lake. You could probably maybe extrapolate. If they're 6 weeks behind their average, if this is true, if the average is somewhere in mid-November, which it might be up there, then we should be 6 weeks behind on ours, which would put us at near record late freezes. I think the record late for Mendota is January 30th. And so, you know, we're only 5 weeks away from that right now, and I don't see it freezing. I really don't see it freezing in the next two or three. I honestly don't. I don't see how that's going to happen.
Yeah, I would be amazed if it did.
Yeah, this snow will help. It'll cool the water a little bit falling into it and melting. But, boy, other than that, I mean, it's, you know, we're not going to have temperatures that are way below 20 degrees for any period of time to get the water to cool off fast. We've got a long way to go.
Well, Sue in Milwaukee has a question for us, so let's go there. Hi, Sue. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
My question is, if the oceans are warming, would you expect that this kind of an El Nino winter is going to become our norm?
That is a good question. The El Nino is related to departures from the average and the distribution of that unusually warm water. It's displaced usually towards the east to the central or sometimes even the eastern equatorial Pacific Ocean. If the whole background temperature goes up, maybe it will be more difficult to actually get substantial perturbations to that higher average, in which case one could argue, this might not be the right answer, but one could argue that they actually become less frequent, and the big ones anyway, the big one like we're having this year. On the other hand, it's such a complicated phenomena, and it does depend on a certain amount of heat content in the ocean over a broad, broad area, that if the whole ocean gets warmer, you might be able to expect more frequent departures that lead to these conditions. So I guess I don't really know what the answer is. Steve, what do you think about that?
I think it would make another good qualifying example.
Yeah, I think so too.
But, yeah, I think, you know, the general circulation, the big patterns with the Hadley cell and the Farrell cell, that's probably not going to change, right, with the global warming. So you would still have that warm water in the western part of the Pacific being piled up by the easterly winds. So you might still be getting Ninos, but you're right. You know, they may not be as intense just because the eastern Pacific is still going to be pretty warm.
Yeah, and then if you have sort of a more uniform a distribution of convection that doesn't follow a warm puddle or warm bubble anyway of the Pacific Ocean, maybe everything changes in a way that makes, you know, discerning between El Nino conditions and non-El Nino conditions more difficult in a warmer climate.
Yeah,
it might be.
Very interesting. Thanks, Sue.
Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in, too. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Well, let's turn to Bob in Eau Claire next. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon, you guys.
Hi.
Happy holidays.
To you as well.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, and thank you for coming in on your, quote, day off to do this.
No problem.
Above and beyond. I would like to know where I could go to get either a statewide or city-by-city compilation of temperatures for a year, or even if there is such a thing as being able to get several years to compare and contrast between temperature and precipitation.
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
No.
Okay.
I was just going to say, is there such an animal?
Yeah. For many years down into the past, it's a little bit more obscure for me. I'm not sure exactly how one does that. But for, let's say, the last 4 or 5 years, over select cities in the state of Wisconsin and maybe across the country, if you look at other National Weather Service forecast offices, that's where I'd send you to the National Weather Service forecast office page at Milwaukee, for instance, for the southern part of our own state. I think they have 5 or 6 cities listed there where you can look at the climate data, the high temperature for the day, the low temperature for the day, how far that deviates from the average, and then the amount and type of precipitation for every day, including wind information and everything, all the way back probably now till December 2010, I'm going to guess. It might be even 2011. So it's either 4 or 5 years worth of that. It's a bit of a longhand way to do it, but it does give you beautiful data, absolutely perfect data.
Yeah.
And so you'd go to, how do you do it? National Weather Service, Milwaukee, MKE is the abbreviation. That might be where you start on the Google. And then Google that. And then if you go to, there's going to be a whole bunch of options across the top of the page. One of them will be local climate information. And then if you do a little bit of searching, you can find local climate data. And that page will come up. Then it becomes very obvious how to go around and navigate through the data.
And for other cities, are there other cities in the state that have National Weather Service? For instance, we're on the western side of the state at Eau Claire.
Yeah, so
would we have to go to Minneapolis?
You could try La Crosse first. That's the National Weather Service forecast office.
Okay.
Minneapolis may also have some of the western towns in Wisconsin on its page, and then Green Bay for the east. And then if, let's say, you were interested in, southern Idaho, you'd go to Pocatello or Boise, and they'd probably have cities in the area. You could do the same thing.
Is there one in Superior?
No.
Okay.
No, there might be an observing site, but there's not a forecast office.
Okay.
There is one in Duluth, however, so that's close.
Okay, so that's close.
And they would have Superior on their website.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much, and Happy New Year to you all.
Thank you, Bob.
To you.
Same to you as well. Appreciate it. We have a question about rain or snow from Cheryl in Eau Claire. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi there. We got 2.1 inches of rain the other day, and our weatherman said, well, that would equal 23 inches of snow. And, I mean, I prefer driving in rain, but is 23 inches of snow better for us, you know, ground-wise, whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Boy, that's a good question.
It depends on a lot of things, I bet.
Yeah, if the ground's not frozen, then I think it would be a good thing, because then it could seep into the ground and helps, you know, replenish some of the groundwater.
Do we get
if it comes down as rain, then it's, you know, it's going to run right into the rivers and the lakes and leave the area.
Do we get more moisture with that slow snow melt, or
if it melts slowly, the ground is not frozen and can absorb it?
Yeah, I think if you don't have, you know, if you want to just make a blanket statement, maybe the best answer, or maybe the best condition, if you don't yet have snow, is to get a snow cover on there, even if the ground isn't frozen. I think Steve's alluding to this.
Yeah.
Because the ground will provide heat to the bottom surface of the snow pile, melt it very readily, and that water will just seep into the ground, and there's no way it can evaporate out of the ground with a snow cover on top. And that's really valuable for agriculture.
I just wondered, because when the weatherman here locally said, well, this would equal this much snow, but
yeah,
I'd rather drive in 2 inches of rain than 23 inches of snow.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think, though, if your business is agriculture, you probably would rather have the snow cover in December and January.
Yeah. Okay. And it's wintertime in Wisconsin. We should have snow cover.
Yeah.
True. All right, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your question or weather experience. And if you got a photo, weather photo, I haven't checked to see if we've got any yet, but if you've got a weather photo, go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post it there. And we have a question from Stephen DePere. How does snow cover in Canada affect Wisconsin weather? And actually someone else wondered what's the snow cover in Canada like these days?
Yeah, that's a good question. The first one has a ready answer, and that is a greater snow cover in northwestern Canada, the prairie provinces of Canada, does have an effect on our surface temperatures, a fairly profound one. If there's a deep and persistent snowpack from, let's say, early November, when it usually starts to appear in much of the southern parts, anyway, of the provinces in Canada, then it tends to reduce the amount of moderation that Arctic air masses will experience on their way southward into the continental United States. And so if you have a lot of snow there, it's harder to make that air warm up as it's coming south. And that makes us a little cooler than normal, all other things being equal. The current status of the snowpack in Canada is a good question. I don't know the answer to that. My guess would be that in eastern Canada, it's probably way below normal because it's been so much warmer than average. Even, in, you know, we've been talking about the eastern United States, but it's true also in the southern parts of the eastern provinces of Canada, way above normal temperatures. Montreal, for instance, above normal. So I bet you that they've struggled with their snow cover as well.
There we go. And Lee Richard in Hartley, Illinois, has a comment for us. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Hey, it was fun listening because you were talking about the weather in northern Illinois going from sleet to rain.
Mm.
And as soon as you guys said that, I mean, I'm watching out the window, and guess what it did? It rained.
Well, we don't like to brag, Rich, but, you know.
Yeah, you guys know what you're doing. It was a wonderful experience to hear that, and it all happened. So thank you for everything.
Yeah, thanks, Richard. Appreciate the call. Well, that was, I don't know, Providence, I guess.
Yeah, it could be.
We have, that was Steve in De Pere wondered about how the snow cover affects Wisconsin weather. And what causes, we've sort of, I think, addressed this, but maybe not directly. What exactly causes El Nino, Tom wonders.
Hmm. Steve, you were kind of hitting on that with the Hadley circulation and all. You want to pick that up?
Yeah, so, in what we might call a normal year, or even in just the general circulation of the atmospheric winds, over the Pacific Ocean, we have these northeasterly winds, the trade winds, and they just continually blow. And they pile water from the Pacific Ocean up on the western part over by the maritime continents of Indonesia, if you will. And as it piles up there, it gets warm. And so you have this pool of really warm water. And that's what convection likes. That's what hurricanes like, as another example. That warm water evaporates and provides the water vapor for the storms. And then for some reason, reasons we don't fully understand, you have those easterly trade winds weaken. And once those winds weaken, that water that's been piled up on one side of the Pacific Ocean sloshes back to the eastern part of the Pacific Ocean, and all that is nice warm water. And with that warm water, the convection follows along with it. And because that convection is such a large mass of precipitation and energy, it causes a change in the jet streams, for example, in the northern hemispheres, and then that kind of has a role in influencing changing weather patterns up by us.
So that was excellent.
Yeah, that was great. That was a very very straightforward answer, which was great.
Sounds like he memorized the answer to a qualifying exam question.
Well,
I had that in 1986.
Yeah.
So people are going to say, what the heck is a qualifying exam question?
Yeah.
So you better tell them.
Okay, yeah. We have an exam at the end of a year or so of study in the graduate program in the department where students, if they take this exam, it's sort of a comprehensive exam on all the stuff that the foundational material that they should have learned in the first year. And if they do very well on it, then we decide they've qualified for pursuit of a PhD. If they don't do so well on it, they can try it again, and until they do as well as we require, then they can't pursue the degree. So it's a real hurdle for the students, and they know more about our science than we do by the time they're done studying about that. They really do.
Well, Wade in Appleton, who has not taken the qualifier, I don't think, has a question for you anyway. Hi, Wade. Thanks for calling.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Oh, just kind of a sort of a climate change type question. So, once when North America was covered with glaciers, a good chunk of it, what caused, the climate to change back then? Obviously, there wasn't any, carbon emissions or anything. Just curious what you guys think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mean what initiated the glaciation or melted it away? Yeah, that's a good question.
Obviously, there's a significant, something significant happened where the glaciers started to recede.
Yeah, the recession of the glaciers. Yeah, okay. This is a question that's a very good question. People are trying to understand. There's so many different aspects to it. There are certain cycles in the natural system that contribute to either the increase in ice at unusually low latitudes, or then the decrease of it that had accumulated during an ice age. And one of those is the tilt of the Earth's axis and its revolution around the sun. They're not exactly constant, and so those things undergo periodic changes, which can influence the amount of incoming solar radiation and or decrease the amount of incoming solar radiation, make it cooler. So that's one thing. One is there's also natural fluctuations in the carbon dioxide content that are, as far as I know, not particularly well understood, although we're able to trace them in the bubbles that are left in ice cores, so we know what the long-term record is. But some really small-scale things, too, affect the recession of the ice. One of them that's really interesting to me is the accumulation of dust on the ice. And all of us know something about what this does. If you ever drive by a parking lot in the middle of the winter after a big snow, first day of the plowed snow, big pile, it's pristine white. But after a while, it gets kind of filled, covered with dust and maybe even some sand that we've applied ourselves. And that increases what's called, or decreases what's called the albedo, the amount of incoming radiation that's reflected. The darker the surface gets, the more it absorbs, and that starts to melt it away. So the accretion of dust on the ice is one thing. Another is you can have the Hudson Bay was a big factor. It was a huge, it was covered with ice during the glaciation, but when it finally broke, that ice broke up underneath the water, then that allowed huge excursions of ice to leave through the North Atlantic, and that accelerated the decrease of the ice cover over North America. So there's a whole bunch of really cool factors that lead to the rapid decrease. It's not really it's not really an incremental thing. It's probably punctuated by some catastrophes like the enormous collapse of ice over the Hudson Bay and so on.
Sure.
Interesting.
All right.
Thanks, Wade. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. We had a comment from Stephen on Facebook. Upper Cobbeshine Lake in Hazelhurst still has a good portion of open water. So it is 6 weeks behind last year. So 6 weeks is turning out to be the
magic number, huh?
The magic number. And someone else, Jack, wondered, when do you actually think Lake Mendota will freeze?
Jack,
there's a contest on that.
Yeah.
When does it normally freeze?
Normally, the median date is the 19th of December. I don't know what the average is. There's a little bit of a difference between the average and the median, but the median is the 19th of December, so we're already a week, 10 days past that. Yeah, there's a contest, Steve reminded me. So I think, Steve and I, our answer is going to be, we think it'll freeze April 1st.
Because it'll be open by April 1st.
January 1st.
No, I'm not going to be in the contest. I really do believe we are going to make a run at the all-time latest freeze, which, to remind you again, is January 30th. So it could be right around that last week of January, which would be exceptional. And that is, of course, just a guess, because if we go a couple of weeks with above normal temperatures, it just extends this rough six-week barrier even further out into the future.
I'm going with February 2nd.
Boy, imagine if that happened. Wow. That would be unbelievable.
Is that Groundhog Day?
It is, yeah. Whoa, that would be a good one, Larry.
That's why I picked it.
Let's say this. The next time we meet, the last Monday of January, we may still be wondering about this. That's possible.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, man. Well, in the meantime, we have just about out of time, but the records that have been broken this year are
astounding and comprehensive. All kinds of them. You know,
as you look back over the year, I mean.
Yeah. The thing that's caught my attention, of course, is this incredibly warm December. And it's not just Madison. It's not just Wisconsin. It's the whole North American continent. And then on top of that, it's not just North America. It's or the eastern two-thirds of North America, because it's not so true in the western third. But the whole hemisphere is warmer than average again. And we had 2 years in a row where the hemispheric average temperature in the lower troposphere, by the measure that I'm using, broke all records in the 66-year time series. If we were possible to have a third straight record-breaking year, that would be unbelievable. I can't even imagine that'll happen, but so far we're on track to do it. Unbelievable.
Wow. Are there any weather stories that stood out? Other weather stories that stood out to you other than that? As we're just thinking, we got about a minute to go here.
Oh, yeah. Huh? Steve, you had some in our column today.
I think the one that really stands out is the really warm wintertime that we've been having. Yeah. I mean, I saw on Christmas Eve, I actually took our rowboat out and went on Lake Mendota. And then later on, I saw a bunch of bass fishing boats, being driven around. So,
unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And that was followed by this looks like we're going to have a record warm 2015. And if you remember back to July, we were actually slightly cooler than normal. So again,
that's
it goes
right,
back
to
what I was saying earlier. You know, we're more than 10 degrees above average December temperatures, so it's quite amazing.
And I believe that the in the southern New England, maybe it's Boston, maybe it's Massachusetts in general, they had an all-time coldest month in 2015, and December 2015 is the all-time warmest December they've ever had. So they've had in 1 year an all-time coldest month and an all-time warmest month. That is unusual. That is really remarkable.
Well, it's remarkable that another year's gone by, guys.
I know, man.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks so much. And we'll see you next year.
All right. Looking forward to it.
All right.
Steve, have a good time in New Mexico.
I will, and I'll be there in person next time.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Steve Ackerman, director of the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies and a professor, as well, of course, and John Martin, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the UW-Madison. Great to have them along. They're back next year on the last Monday of January. Tomorrow we'll take a look at a new book about the Civil War and what followed the Civil War with a lot of the principles involved. And then looking at genealogy and exploring your family tree. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.